episode 88 of Drunk on Comics. Just want to let you guys know, if I had a dollar for every time I was wrong, I'd be broke.
No.
Or rich.
You'd be filthy fucking rich. Oh, wait. Nope, there's another dollar.
God, I need to make that happen.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Welcome to Drunk on Comics.
Thanks.
Every time. I don't know why I forget that you do this every fucking time to me. And it makes me laugh every time, too. Well, where the fuck was I? Well, this is Drunk on Comics.
You were introducing the program. I almost said the television program.
You were about to say, my name's Derek, and also with us we have...
Yeah. So, who else is here?
Matt.
I think we're waiting for you to introduce everyone.
Oh, Tony. And Kevin.
Woo! Have we even done introductions lately?
Yeah, we try to. Just We're consistently picking up new listeners, which thank you, by the way, for all of you that are.
You're welcome.
Not you.
Well, why just because you listen to it 8 times in a row doesn't mean that means you have new listeners.
No, I was thanking the listeners as well as the new listeners. You know,
okay.
And our listeners who go tell one friend and they tell a friend and they tell a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And we turn into an ancient Chinese secret. So
I don't want to be secret. I want to be known.
The type of secrets that everybody knows. Come on, those are the best kind.
Yeah. But this is our...
Is that
our...
really a secret if everyone knows it?
Shh. I'm not telling you.
This is our weekly podcast where we sit around and we drink some beers and we talk a little bit about comics and conventions and sometimes collecting and industry news and all other kinds of fun stuff. So welcome. And we should probably get things... kicked off. That he's pouring a drink, people at home.
Definitely doesn't sound so much like
you asked for some of that, not all, like most of it.
Well, I'm gonna take half of yours too.
No,
this is I'm kind of saddened because
let me do it.
This is the end of the tilt.
Yes, this is our last podcast that is sponsored by the free tilt that I had, and because of that, there's only 2 cans left, and so that's why we gotta split it up a bit.
Yeah.
So after this, we're gonna turn our attention to Four Loko.
I don't know if you can get that anymore. I think they've like banned it in most places.
No, they got around because they banned it because you can't mix the caffeine in the booze. They just took the caffeine out.
Yeah. So it's still got the taurine and the ginseng
and the bad taste
and the booze.
Yeah. The awful hangover.
All right, guys, we got a lot to cover this week, so let's get things kicked off here with Off the Shelf. And this week, we are proud to announce that we are going to be appearing, once again, this May 16th, 17th, and 18th in Novi, Michigan at Motor City Comic Con.
Heck yeah.
So you guys can check them out at MotorCityComicCon.com. Quick little, just touching on a few of the guests. They've got Shatner, is kind of a...
Which is crazy, is that I think that will be... they've had a big Star Trek guest every year for the last 4 or 5 years.
Who was their big Star Trek guest last year?
Uhura?
Yeah,
I forget her real name.
Okay.
The communications officer?
Yeah, now just a couple quick names on the comic side as far as people that they've released.
You said Shatner, you're done.
Well, the comic side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Chris Claremont. Who I am extremely excited to meet, Jerry Conway and Mark Waid, 3 huge names in writing comics. Also got Charles Paul Wilson III, Bill Sienkiewicz, Ryan Otley, James L. Barr, our good buddy Cena Grace, Koi Pham, and Riley Brown, just a couple that I'm naming off the top. And Kevin, Art Baltazar is going to be there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So go check out MotorCityComicCon.com and then go pre-purchase your tickets and plan on seeing us here in May at the Suburban Collection Showplace.
Excellent.
I said it right.
I was going to say, is this going to be the first time that you say it right on every podcast?
No, I'm going to start calling it the Showcase Showdown here pretty soon. All right. So, Tony, you want to kick us off?
Not really. I kind of want to have you kick it off.
All right, fine. You're getting a twofer.
That worked? Wow.
Yeah. You guys are getting a twofer this
week.
Yeah. I am going to cover The Punisher, number one, and Wolverine, number one. They don't tie in at all together, so okay. I'm just going to do one at a time. I'm going to start with Punisher, number one, and this was written by, is it Nathan Edmondson? Of course, they put the credits in the very back of the book, and if I would have written down my notes, I would have been fine.
That irks me so much when I wish they could just do the credits right on the front page so everyone can see it, not do some weird somewhere in between the book or towards the end. Like, because then it's like, what the fuck? Don't you want people to know who did this? No, but
they want you to flip through and look at the ads again.
Yeah, here we go. It's Nathan Edmondson did the wrote it. Mitch Gerards did the art on it, and VC's Corey Pettit did letters on here. Mitch Gerards also did the cover. This is basically Frank Castle is now in L.A. And the thing that I want to touch on, and like I said, I'm going to be real brief on this. Great book, it really is, and it's a very different look at the Punisher. You know, reading the last Greg Rucka and Marco Cicchetto run on it, it was very dark. You know, it's like, I don't know what happened to his eye, why he was wearing the patch, because I kind of missed that part when I jumped on that series.
It's everyone was doing eye patches at that time.
Well, his was an eye bandage.
Okay.
You know, so I'm guessing his eye grew back just fine. Now, one other thing. Last I knew, he was imprisoned, like down at the bottom of the sea, and I don't know how he ever got out of that.
Houdini.
Yeah.
Houdini.
But
he had a thingamabob, maybe 20.
A thingamabob, like a bobber?
He studied under MacGyver, and he had some duct tape and a paperclip, and he was able to get his way out.
A tampon and a rubber band, you can get out of anything. But
because MacGyver just has those two things.
Well, you know.
He always steals them from his lady friend's purse.
But this book here, I want to touch on the writing. It's some of the, it's a nice, new, fresh look at the Punisher. He's still going out and he's doing, you know, he's doing all of his things to the bad people.
His punishing.
Yeah, his punishing. But you see a little bit more human side of Frank, you know, and he talks about, you know, kind of like he still does seem to live an everyday life. He goes to a bar and has a beer and, you know, but the one thing that I wanted to touch on partly was the art in this isn't super dark, which is strange for a Punisher comic book. Because they've been so depressingly dark. It's worked very well and it's been beautiful in the past, Cicchetto in particular. But Mitch Gerards, he does a great job on the overall look on this book. It's still violent, you know, but it's not necessarily grotesquely violent in here. The colors on here are fantastic, and he did that as well, and that's where I really wanted to give a big shout-out on it. It definitely has more of the look of the newer Marvel books that are coming out right now, a little bit more independent style than that house style on there. Definitely worth a look on there. Now, Wolverine number one. This one was written by Paul Cornell. Ryan Stegman did pencils. Mark Morales did inks. And David Curiel did colors. And Corey Pettit did letters again on this one as well. And I just picked up the regular edition cover, which was the plain Stegman. Now, Wolverine, I got to be honest, I knew he lost his healing factor. I didn't know how because I haven't been paying attention. But they did a nice little thing saying there was a virus that caused him to lose his power.
Hmm.
And I kind of wondered, I'm like, okay, how are you going to go out and fight people if you're that easily hurt? His suit now is actually armored up.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, cool. Cornell does a really nice job introducing a bunch of characters that I'm not familiar with. I don't know if they're brand new. I don't know if they came from another storyline or not, because with the number of books that Wolverine's in, I can't keep track of all of them. You know? And so, you know, there's only so much that I'm going to read.
Did they mention at all that how he can survive with his metal skeleton without his healing?
No.
Because, and I mean, that seems like a real, like, oh, well, that's just being a nerd and reading into the details, except that they've mentioned it on other occasions, particularly after the House of M, when all the mutants lost their powers.
Mm-hmm.
They heard Wolverine screaming, and they thought, oh, no, he would die if, you know, with his metal skeleton without his healing factor. And so, since it's kind of been written into the comic books, I was curious if they cared.
I believe it's that just like all superheroes have some innate healing ability to recover quicker than a human can. I think his healing ability is still there. It's just not he can just heal from a gunshot wound. But he'll still heal a bit faster than a normal human, so maybe it's in the background kind of doing that.
Kind of like Cable's latent psionic powers are
constantly,
subconsciously keeping the virus. All right.
Yeah.
I'll go with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to keep reading it. You know, I picked up a couple issues of the last Wolverine series, but it wasn't what I was looking for in a series. The main reason that I'm recommending this book is Stegman is at the top of his game with this thing. If you guys haven't peeked at the art in this, it is fucking gorgeous.
Is the story hooking you in? Because, I mean, if the story is centered around, oh, Wolverine could die, we all know that it's not going to happen. So, I mean, I would much rather see a story that is interesting why he doesn't have his healing power than to create a false drama that, oh, he's close to death and he could die this time, because we know that's not going to happen.
It's more interesting on what Cornell did here with the story and the fact that he doesn't have his healing factor is utilized to give different aspects to his character. It's not the main story.
I think that's worth
to get around the adamantium question. Maybe they do something they've never done before and take it out of him.
Yeah, that'd be cool to see. Does he have claws underneath the metal claws? Maybe there's bones?
As long as they don't start coming out looking like corkscrews like they did way back in the 90s, that was fucking
I just wish he had his brown costume back.
Yeah. Well, now the one thing in here that I am going to come back to the art, but as far as the writing, the nice thing, and by the way, I'm giving shit away here, so there's your warning. He doesn't want the armor because he's not used to it. Like, you know, he's a little stubborn. He doesn't really want to talk about the fact that apparently he got the shit kicked out of him by Sabretooth.
Well, why does he need armor when you have writer's armor? I mean, he's a favorite character, so that's the best armor of all.
and you're in Marvel.
My writers won't let me die.
Yeah. But it's kind of cool, though, because he goes to the Black Widow to learn a little bit more about using guns. Because he's like, all right, he's like, I'm going to have to start utilizing.
Yeah, that is one thing I like, that he's not popping his claws all the time, because that hurts him now without having this healing factor. So got to go to some other means to kill.
Yeah. And, you know, so it's nice. This is kind of more like the little group that they show in here is a little bit more of a Black Ops type group. They don't get into a ton of detail, but it's enough to get you introduced to what's going on. But Jesus, I mean, the art in here alone, so worth it. Like, every page I'm sitting there looking at going, I want to buy that original page. I want to buy that original page. I want to buy that original page. I mean,
not that one so much, but I do want to buy the next one.
Like, the worst page in there was like, yeah, I'd buy that. You know,
I'd buy this page.
Well, that's an ad, Tony. But it's beautiful. I mean, like I said, I don't think I've ever seen any better work by Stegman than what he did in this issue. I'm absolutely loving it. I'll keep picking this book up just for the art by itself. Even if I don't get drawn in the story, I could just flip through this and just look at the pictures.
I love that they gave Wolverine the iconic slash through the eye.
Well, that's that thing. He got that from Sabretooth.
Oh, when did that happen?
Before this book.
Oh, okay.
That's like he's actually scarred by Sabretooth. So yeah, he's got that.
Not just emotionally either.
Yeah. But anyway, I'd say go pick up both these books, you know, especially if you're into the superhero and the anti-hero type books. These are good ones to read. All right, Tony, that was your break. Now it's your turn.
Oh, I don't want to go yet. Kevin, what do you got?
What? Well, all right. Well, sounds like I'm going to have to step up to the plate, but I'm mixing it up a little bit. Actually, I'm going to review something that's been out for a little bit.
Going to do some Huey Lewis? Gotta go back in time.
It doesn't sound like anything like him. Well, no, every time you say that, it sounds like worse and worse. Soon you're gonna sound like Jerry Lewis.
Well, no, that was the Dana Carvey when he and what was the other tall dude's name? Kevin Nealon, when they run into Huey Lewis in the elevator and they're just singing the songs to him. Like, and they did it with Sting on a different episode.
Oh, man, you gotta go back and watch that.
Yeah, you gotta go back in time.
Well, man, there's a bunch of good titles that came out this week, but there was a book that came out a bit ago that I still want to wanted to bring out bring to the forefront for our listeners. Now, it is another number one, and it seems like that's all I do in the show is number ones. Or
no, most of your reviews are number twos.
They are.
I was going there.
Well, but yet you still listen, or maybe you fast forward through this bullshit. I don't know. I'll try to ride a high for a moment. This week I want to review or give a half-assed review for Disney's Kingdom's Seekers of the Weird, number one. Written by Brandon Seifert, pencils by Carl Moline, inks by Rick Magar, colors by Jean-Francois Beaulieu.
Beaulieu? Maybe?
Letters by Joe Carmagna.
We know Joe.
Yeah, which, yeah, that threw me for a loop. Now, tell me, what is VC?
It is Virtual Calligraphy, I believe.
Oh. It's their group's name.
Yeah, it's Corey Pettit, I believe, is the one that started that company. It's I think him, I think Chris Eliopoulos is in it, Joe and Corey.
So they farming out the lettering?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like I think it's like Hi-Fi and Guru FX, okay, are coloring studios. That they have a number of different people that work within it, and so they just farm it out. Like DC uses, I think it's Hi-Fi.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they do. I know Guru FX.
But are they owned by the umbrella that is Warner?
No, or no, it's their own company. Oh. And then Marvel hires, you know, VC,
okay,
to do most of their lettering that I see.
I would have never guessed. I'm happy that I asked about that.
Yeah, and I never knew what the VC was until, and listeners can go way back. We interviewed Joe probably a year ago.
Yeah, around a year ago.
Yeah, and talked to him then, and he can kind of give you some background on that.
Okay. Well, getting back to Seekers of the Weird, in this story, we're introduced to a brother and sister, Maxwell and Melody. And they're just normal kids, and they have sort of normal parents. They want them to have a normal life. But yet, the parents own a kind of a witchcraft store, and they sell, you know, crazy crap like that. The place of the business is called Keep It Weird, which I think that was a cool name for a bizarro store. Now,
what do you mean bizarro store?
They sell bizarre oddities. Like in one of the panels comes into the store and wants to purchase Starwort. That sounds weird, right?
Starwort?
Wort.
I was going to say, because that would be what I'd call the first three.
Wow. Now, the kids are completely oblivious to what's really happening to the store until one day. Now, side note, I like the fact that these are late teens, probably, I'd say, 17, 18-year-olds.
You like them young?
Well, I don't like them too young. Because really, honestly, when I think of Disney, I'm thinking of they're going to go for 11, 12, 13-year-old placement of a character in here. And that's instantly a distraction for me. I don't like them that young.
You're more like, I'm trying to think of the old Disney movies, like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and like something Witch Mountain.
Well, I enjoyed those because I grew up with those movies, and I grew up watching them younger, so I like them. But now older, I don't want children in my movies.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, I am going to be get off my grass old guy coming up.
I already am that guy. I have an apartment. But
they did an excellent job bringing these characters together, make it really believable that these are brother and sister, and wonderful interaction between them, and so it was a full package to make this a great story. Now, getting back to what I was saying about this the store and their parents, one day they find their parents getting pummeled by some weird oddities that are like taxidermy coming alive and some other weird monsters, and then there's this crazy witch appearing out of nowhere.
And taxidermy coming alive is actually kind of scary.
Sure.
Because how do you kill it?
Well, I don't want to spoil anything.
I was always afraid of that hall in the museum where you got all the taxidermy animals and stuff. When I was a kid, that freaked me out.
See, when I was a kid, I thought it was cool. The older I get, the creepier I think it is.
Oh, and in this book, you remember the wardrobe from the line, The Witch and the Rope wardrobe?
Yeah.
Chronicles of Narnia?
Yeah. 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 They got one of those in here. Sweet. But instead of a wardrobe, it's a safe.
Plagiarism.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Safe.
No, and box. Really, I mean,
it'd be small.
The adventure starts to rise, but once they start going, they go through this door, safe, whatever the fuck you want to call it, I mean, really things start to accelerate. For our number one, this book is extremely fast-paced, which I like. Unfortunately, it's only 20 pages.
So it's like two shorter than the average
book. Yeah, for $3.99.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Disney.
You got to pay for the name.
Well, I'd say most of the stuff we're reading these days is Disney. It just has a Marvel title on it.
Don't tell me that. Don't ruin the illusion.
Well, eventually you'll find a cameo by Mickey Mouse in one of your books.
Yeah, well, and you know, the whole Disney Kingdoms, you know, label on this book instantly made me think of Kingdom Hearts.
Sure. Honestly.
Tony just opened up a page and found some thought bubbles that were
in the shape of Mickey Mouse.
I wonder if they had to pay for licensing trademark then. Nice.
No, because that's owned. That's a Marvel book. Anyway.
Honestly, like, you bring up Disney being on the title, and actually I almost didn't pick it up because of that, because I'm like, oh, how good is this going to be?
That's actually why I didn't pick it up.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I see what you're thinking with Kingdom Hearts. Do you ever play Kingdom Hearts?
Oh, my God. That's fucking amazing.
I started to, and the thing is, and I love the Final Fantasy and all that, but as soon as the Disney characters were in it, I'm like, done. I'm out.
No, exploring those worlds.
I never played them, but I watched plenty of people play them. And the first one, I don't think I could go back to play, but they did like a remastering of it or something. Mm-hmm. So
Sure. Yeah. But
sorry, Kevin.
Oh, no, that's fine. Par for the course for one of my craptacular reviews.
Number twos.
As for this issue, I mean, it was well thought out, completely enjoyable. Definitely a lot of panels in this were suspenseful, which is difficult to do. I would think it would be difficult to do with, you know, such a limited, being at a number one, limited pages.
Disney.
And Disney, yeah. But I'd say it was very well done. Art was very tight, and the colors were done, creative use of colors in this. And a lot of imaginative characters, monsters, riddled throughout this, and some interesting ideas that the sky's the limit for the potential on this book. So I think this is a great pickup story, and I mean, I think there's so much potential for this. Now, and this was also another book where I was also really intrigued by the, I don't know what we call this, a prologue. Or
epilogue?
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah, epilogue, but done by the editor. Now, I've there's only been a few times where I actually read these at the end. Because usually I'll just, okay, the art's over, story's over, book done, throw it to the side.
Yeah, but when you only got 20 pages, you got time to kill.
But I read this, and this was almost as interesting as when I was reading MacGyver and the backstory to that. So MacGyver Fugitive Gauntlet, if you've never picked that up, do so there. But here, there's two things that Bill Roseman, who's the editor in this book, mentions. He talks about the origin of the book, which is basically how a bunch of Marvel guys and Disney Imagineers got together and said, you know, let's collaborate on something. And they did by the second thing, which was touched upon, which was something called the Museum of the Weird, which is a collection of creepy curiosities unearthed from around the globe. It's presented to you almost as a Ripley's Believe It or Not, brought to you by Disney Imagineers. Now, Walt Disney actually wanted to put this into a park, whether it was Disneyland or Magic Kingdom. Well, unfortunately, he passed away, and for 50 years plus, this idea has been shelved. And now they're kind of unearthing it and taking some of these ideas and putting them into the story. So fascinating origin story in this, whatever you want to call it, at the end of the book. So cool. It's been out for a couple weeks. Issue 2 comes out mid-February. So I think you could easily pick up issue 2 and chuck along if you can't find issue 1.
Very quick question before we jump on to Tony.
Ew.
Yeah, well. is this something that you, while you were reading it, are seeing them carry over into a video or like an animated series or a movie?
If it gains traction, absolutely.
Or live action.
Yes.
All of the above?
All. Or any of the above? Honestly, I think this might be for them what they're hoping for with anything. It gains traction, popularity, and then you can, it's its own franchise. And then you do whatever you want with it. RPG, video, live action, or action video games.
Toys.
DVDs, toys. But I didn't really start thinking about that until afterwards, because it was so good.
Well, the real question everyone wants to know was it Old Man Willis the janitor?
Moving right along, Tony, what you got?
I got.
Nope, never mind. I'm going to go before you. I'm going to cover Forever Evil number 5, mostly to get out of my normal Avengers rut. but also because I'd actually like this story. I think DC's doing a fantastic job letting their villains shine and also coming up with some fairly good justifications for why certain villains, like Luther, is trying to save the world. Match that with the upcoming announcements that Luther will be joining the Justice League, and you get a sense of, he's going to be a hero for a while until, of course, he does something bad. All right, this story by Jeff Johns, inker David Finch,
penciler, yeah.
David Finch, inker Richard Friend, and colorist Sonia Obak.
She's doing colors for that book?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I like on the cover where the artists have, put their signature, it says Finch plus Friend. It's kind of sweet. Anyways, in this story, we get Sinestro's fighting Power Ring.
That's one thing that, out of all these bad guys that have come over with this secret society or whatever they're calling themselves, Power Ring is one of my favorite because he's a little pussy. but he's got the most powerful ring out of any ring. I don't understand what that ring's power factor is, what it's based on. It just seems to be a corrupting thing. Everyone calls it a cursed ring.
Yeah, well, it keeps telling him, you could be the strongest, just wish it. Just, like, all you have to do is wish.
It looks like he's kind of got a four-leaf clover on it, so it's almost like it's...
Yeah. It
touch me, Nucky Charms, I'll blow your ass to pieces.
So, yeah, Power Ring's actually been my favorite of the antithesis or the foils of our heroes.
Don't use big words.
I'm sorry. The opposite, the Bizarro of our heroes.
Wait, Bizarro's in there.
I know he is. He's pretty awesome, too. So, you know, in this we get, it's a big battle book. I mean, it's pretty much action all the way through. It's real great. You know, I don't want to spoil too many of the great moments. But I will say this. Luther, being the master manipulator, has a gun pointed at his head and from Deathstroke. And Deathstroke's like, you know, you have this big power armor, but you don't do anything to protect your head. It must be because you want everyone to know it's you. And I wish that what would have happened is Deathstroke would have pulled the trigger and there would have been a force field over Luther's head.
I don't mean to interrupt here, but I'm remembering a variant cover, and I think it was from, like, number two, that had Luther, maybe it's two or three, that had Luther standing there with Deathstroke holding a gun to his head.
Hmm. I'll go back and check those covers, but
maybe some listeners can correct me or verify or something. But anyway.
But eventually, you know, Luther, being a highly intelligent person, is able to easily persuade the mercenary to think of something that he should have been smart enough to see in the first place. Chiefly, well, when you're done working for them, they'll have no use for you, and therefore they'll just get rid of you. But if you come work for us to get rid of them, you know, then you'll continue on the hunt, as he called it. And I was just kind of like, how did Deathstroke not think of that himself? But, you know, we got to show how smart Luther is to point out the obvious to people. So
well, he just knows how to, like, be a marksman.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to be, like, smart.
So, anyways, good battles. My favorite part is at the end when Batman's sitting there with Catwoman versus all these villains who have come together. They convince Sinestro that he should stay, and this one actually is good because he convinced Sinestro to fight on Earth because Hal Jordan's not here. And wouldn't it just be great to rub it in Hal Jordan's face that he saved the Earth while he was off planet? And I was like, that was kind of a nice way to bait him into it. But Batman's like, okay, well, if we're going to do this, I'm in charge. We're following my rules. And Catwoman's like, Batman, I think they're in charge. You just get a nice shot of all these real, you know, like, yeah, Omega-level villains.
I like that Batman was being Batman. He was doing his thing.
Yeah.
But also, all right, I got a little pissed off at him saying, what the fuck, dude? You can't be this superhero all the time. But even he kind of is like, okay, I guess you're kind of right, Catwoman. Like, yeah. I'm not. So he's not the main focus like he is in all of his books. Let these other villains shine.
Well, it's called Forever Evil, so I think it is good to let them be the runners. The other cool thing about it was when, in the last episode, when he was using the yellow ring, and it seemed to be really not very powerful, like the ring needed to be recharged or whatever, Sinestro commented and said, you know, if you would have just embraced the fear, Batman, you would be an amazing Yellow Lantern.
Daredevil could never be a Yellow Lantern.
I know, he's fearless. Man without fear. So, the last one,
he doesn't know what the shit looks like, so.
Last ones, we even get a greater threat than the crime syndicate, as whatever destroyed their world has made their way to our DC Earth.
Is it Galactus?
Whatever Earth. Earth 52, is this
it? It looks like Galactus from the
Galactus.
Yeah.
No, it looks like Galactus from the crappy Fantastic Four Rise of Silver Surfer movie. Oh. It's just a cloud of new energy.
And lightning.
It's the ribbon from Star Trek Generations.
Yeah, actually, that's what it is. It's the ribbon.
Yeah. Now, I know Finch has been just fucking solid as hell on his art in this. Has Johns written all of these?
I'm pretty sure Jeff Johns is writing the main story arc of...
Yeah, okay, because I knew that he wrote the first couple. I lost interest and dropped because I buy way too many damn books as it is.
It's okay, someone else will buy it. You can read. This is Tony's.
Dude, I can't even keep up on my own books sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, like, the one thing I will say that about that book where I'm at least going to look through it is David Finch really did a gorgeous job on his art on this one.
Yeah,
you know,
I think that the art has been solid, but I do think that DC does a great job for their big books having a good artist.
Well,
I'm I'm biased, obviously, because I don't read too many DC, but the characters don't draw me in too much. The storylines don't often draw me in. This one's an exception. But I will say that I've always respected the art over there. So
DC tends to have more of a house style than any other publisher out there, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really do. I mean, you can jump from book to book to book, and you're going to get more or less what you expect on art.
Yeah.
That's got its pros and its cons. It depends mm-hmm. on where you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. But Finch, even though it is still in the house style, he does, I think he takes it above and beyond and actually just really brings in a lot of nice, you know, angles and lighting and expressions that a lot of the other artists don't. So, I mean, out of all of them, when you're going for that, the DC look, I like Finch probably the best out of all of them. Tony?
Is it your time?
Someone else want to go?
All right, let's do some news.
we could go find like one of your neighbors and see if they want to come in and talk about comics.
Did you just not read anything? Is this?
No, I just want to go last because saving the best for last. As you guys have gone on, Black Widow is the most amazing book, and Hawkeye is the most amazing book, and all these other things, most amazing book. Loki, Agent of Asgard, is fucking the most amazing book. It is, with hands, without a doubt.
Without hands?
Yes.
you gotta finish your phrases there.
It must be so good you're getting your words jumbled.
It's the best double amputee book you can find.
Without a doubt. Two nubs up.
Oh, God. We're all going to hell for that one.
Go on.
First, before getting into the actual story,
you gotta figure out how to turn the pages.
Yeah, use my tongue. Flip it over. Art by Lee Garbett, color artist Nolan Woodard. We'll talk about the art a bit. And
who wrote it?
Can you let me do my review? I'll talk about the story when I talk about the writer. Talk about the art right now.
Okay.
Jesus, man.
Okay, I'll give you that. Excited to hear you talk about this part.
The art was very good. Something that it's a secondary thing of when I'm reading comic books. I like the story first and foremost, which killed it. But the art also just complemented where this story was going. As you were saying, DC has their very DC feel. This had a very just Marvel-ish, you know, Avengers feel. And there's one page in particular when it was kind of a flashback that seriously felt like I was reading a still from an old,
like, Jack Kirby's Ditko type shit. Holy shit, let me see that.
So this was, for the art in itself, was great.
I was going to say, the big thing there is that it's got better colors because we can print comics with a lot better colors these days.
Well, yeah, but they gave it that grainy,
mm-hmm.
that grainy look. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely like Kirby, Ditko. It's actually a little bit more Simonson version on here, but Jesus, that is beautiful. That is a great page. Wow.
He'd buy that page.
Yeah.
I'd buy a lot of pages if I could.
So overall, art was great. Now, the story is just what blew it out of the park. My hands just got blown off in the park.
Tony, that's why you shouldn't play with hand grenades.
Just playing catch with my nephew.
Here, catch the pin.
Oops. The story was written by Al Ewing. The first page, when you turn it in, you see Loki stabbing his brother Thor in the back. And then you kind of get a pre-synopsis of kind of what's gone on with Loki.
Like with an actual weapon?
Yeah, or, with a sword. He's got a sword all the way through.
Or like, oh, okay.
He's got a sword all the way through Thor's chest.
Yeah. And this whole first page kind of just explained a little bit of what's happened to Loki over the past couple of years. I mean, he was a chick version in,
right before Siege, when the Asgardians got reborn
again. Yeah, then he was reborn as a child, younger person.
After Siege, he died and then was reborn as a child.
And now he's kind of a, I don't know, 18, 20-year-old, like, young adult. Huh. And I don't know where the transition came. I kind of stopped reading Loki when he started being the Young Avengers and was off world universe doing whatever they did in the Young Avengers. So this kind of gives you a little synopsis of what has gone on with him, and it says, you know, surely he wouldn't stab his brother in the back. So you're thinking, is that a fake image? What the hell happened? Why would he be doing that to Thor? knowing he's always been this evil, well, he's always been chaos, but somehow that chaos has always just turned into him being an evil person. Now, he's done great for the world because he formed the Avengers. I mean, single-handedly, he was what made the Avengers.
Wait, Loki is what formed the Avengers?
Yeah. He was the first villain that the Avengers came together to fight.
He's the one that caused the Hulk to go rampaging around.
In Avengers number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he was the person that pulled the strings. That's why in the Avengers movie, he was the bad guy.
He had to be the first bad guy because he's really the threat that brought
the catalyst
together.
That brought.
Yeah,
all those...
I know it's been a long time since I've read Avengers 1.
Yeah, it has been a while, but I just don't remember Loki being.
Yeah, because Avengers 1, they didn't have Captain America in it. That's the only thing I remember is they did not.
Yeah,
have
he came in like what around issue
3-4.
They all came together to fight to try to stop the Hulk.
Yeah,
and it was Loki who would put the Hulk on the rampage and.
So they don't just say.
Well, wait. Did they reveal Loki was the one later on that put the Hulk on the rampage?
No, it was like that story arc.
No shit.
Yeah, it was the first story arc. It wasn't in the first issue. I don't think they said. Oh, and me the last panel. But when you found out, right away,
go back and read those.
I've got the essentials at home. It's just been a few years since I read it, and I just don't remember that. But
so this is a different Loki. This is a secret agent Loki. When he was in Journey into Mystery. He was helping the All Mothers who have taken over Asgard, kind of being their secret servant.
Yeah, but they haven't like taken over as in like overthrew Odin, but Odin got all
left,
abdicated the throne and gave the Odin Force to the All Mothers.
And so
the what?
The Odin Force.
Oh, I thought you said Oomph Force.
The Oomph Force. Yeah. That's only if Oomph has it. It's the Thor Force or the who's ever
Speaking of Black Widow and Hawkeye, they're both in here because he's going up against Avengers Tower. And this is very a spy-type book. So in the essence of Black Widow, I'd say it's got parts of that. It's also got a little bit of magic. It's got Thor being a fucker. I mean...
A bully.
Yeah, a big bully just drinking and everything. And the greatest part of this writing is it's great for anyone that just wants to pick it up and read and see what's going on. But for anyone that's been a dedicated fan of Marvel, it has so much small little like word balloons that go back to a previous story arc, like Civil War or Dark Reign.
Well, and that's something that from what I understand, and a lot of it has to do, which... Huge shout out to the people that write reviews for our website, drunkoncomics.com, shameless plug. But what one of the reviews that came in this week was for Mighty Avengers number 6, which was written by Al Ewing as well. And one of the things that Patrick, our review writer, talked about a lot on there was how well he does with throwing little nods to insider jokes, which if you're not reading it, it's still... cool and it makes sense, but if you are reading, you're like, oh, that's smart.
Yep.
That's
there's smart. Enough there's enough details that you don't feel lost, but there's enough but it's good enough for us to if you're a new reader that you can just jump right in. So
yes, and this whole time you're kind of wondering, what is this mission? What is he doing? What's with them stabbing Thor in the back? And what you finally find out, which is also pulling from the one of the latest Thor arcs, was he kind of got infected with the malevolent. Yeah, that word.
Maleficent.
That's exactly what I was like. Like, this ain't Sleeping Beauty, bitches.
He got infected by Maleficent because she is the hottest villain ever.
Yeah. So he had this thing, and so he had to take this magical sword of truth and pretty much stab Thor with it in order to get that, which explains kind of why Thor was being a thug and an asshole. And what was great about it is that when you finally figure out what's going on, with the story, you're like, he is still a good person. He's not going just to kill his brother, because one of the biggest things that I'm hoping is that he just doesn't turn back into that evil incarnation that he's always been.
Doesn't look like he has to turn into the evil.
No, and one of the greatest things in the end was afterwards, he still broke into the mansion, he still stole stuff, he hacked into their computers, he was captured, and... Thor kind of comes up to him when he's chained into this room, and Thor pretty much says, hey, can you have a beer before you eventually break out? And I'm just like, that's just great writing, too, knowing that Loki's going to just escape. And I'm not going to reveal the big scene, but yes.
Loki dies. Loki dies at the end.
No.
That's his first one.
Oh, I haven't read it. I was just guessing.
We can't have a number two.
No, but it doesn't seem like they're making...
He dies.
Loki 1, or Loki Resurrection number 1.
I wouldn't put it past Marvel for another number 1.
Oh, no, it's going to be Loki number 1 point Resurrection.
So,
good
like
book.
I said, the end pretty much shows how maybe he won't turn into that evil person again. And I like, though, that mischievous side of him. He's still chaos, but it doesn't have to all be bad.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I like about the Thor mythology for Marvel is that it takes from actual Norse mythology but doesn't have to, you know, stay with it, obviously. Loki is not evil. He is just chaos and mischievous, and I like that they're going to bring that side of the character into the forefront. Also, real huge nod that at the beginning, Loki is like he's singing a song in the shower, and it's actually from the musical Wicked. It's called The Wizard and I. And as I was looking at this, reading the lyrics, I was like, is he singing Elphaba's song? Son of a bitch, he is. So nerds out there, go pick it up and Broadway know what nerds. I'm talking about. What? Broadway nerds. Theater nerds.
Yeah.
Theater geeks.
So as I said, I give this book 2 nubs up.
Trust me.
All right, guys. Time for a little news and notes. By the way, Off the Shelf, brought to you by MotorCityComicCon.com. Come see us in May. Quick, I have to give a shout-out that this past Saturday, February 8th, 2014, was Green Lantern Day.
Why?
Because the Green Lanterns that patrol our universe are our sector is 2814. So 2814. And
new way.
The thing that made me laugh the most in awesome fanboy nerdiness is that our buddy Dominic, who's a New York dude that we've gotten to know through social media, check him out at fatlantern.blogspot.com. Dude made a giant Rice Krispie treat that he dyed green in the shape of the Green Lantern symbol.
That's bad.
That's awesome.
And I'm sure it's tasty.
And delicious, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so go check that out. Dude, that's fucking awesome. The only thing that he's missing in this picture is beer. So, what else is out there, guys?
John Romita Jr. is leaving Marvel and going to DC.
That's is kind fucking of big, huge yeah. news.
But is it a long-term thing, or is it just for a book?
I think he's just leaving.
No, he's done. Like, he'd been... Okay, his father, John Romita Sr., mm-hmm. you know, one of the very early on artists with Marvel... And then J.R. Jr. has been there his entire life. And, mm-hmm. I mean, shit, he's been drawing comics since I was in grade school. And, I mean, so we're talking, what,
65 million years ago, I think?
1600 years, okay. Something like that. but, yeah, for him to go to Marvel, it wasn't really expected from what I read. But, yeah, he's doing Superman. Jeff Johns is writing it. Klaus Janson is doing the inks on that, by the way, Kev. And mm-hmm. looks like I'm going to be buying me some Superman.
All right.
So. Sweet. You should it anyway.
Yeah.
It looks like I'm going to buy some kryptonite.
So with that, now Nick Lowe's named senior editor of
Marvel
Spider-Man.
Yeah. I'm still curious to see. We talked about Mike Martz going, leaving DC and coming over to Marvel for editing, but they haven't really announced, I don't think, yet what he's doing. But Nick Lowe, I'm glad to see that. He's been a solid editor for a while, and, you know, to tackle all the Spider-Man books. It's a big job, but, you know, I think that these books, the Spider-Man books, which are already doing very well in continuity, I think will be even tighter with Nick in charge there. Quick little thing we talked about a while back was the Wonder Woman series coming to the CW. No longer happening.
Wait, that's news? I mean, I could pretty much see that happening when we announced that it was coming. They
really?
They just don't.
Well, no,
like
no.
Wonder Woman.
No, well, no. Wonder Woman was fine. The problem was is now that she's in the new Justice League. I'm sorry, Batman versus Superman movie. That it doesn't make sense for them to have a TV show. You know, because it was called Amazon. It was like the origin story
Xena?
Of Wonder Woman. What
it had Xena in it?
Yeah, yeah.
They ever make a Wonder Woman movie, they need to have Lucy Lawless as, like, one of the Amazons in the background fighting.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, so no surprise, that one's not going to be making it. Tony, what else did you got on there?
Well, we're going to talk about shows that we've talked about that are going to be developed. Preacher actually has been picked up by AMC. It's been announced this week that it is going to happen. And with Seth Rogen being attached to it, people were like wondering what's his thing. But he's going to be an executive producer and, I guess, writer
for the show. That book's got some humor in it, and I think it.
And it's dark as fuck, and yeah. AMC, I mean, really, I think is a good choice for it, which pisses me off because now I might actually go and get cable.
Yeah, we'll just wait for it to show up on Netflix.
Or DVDs and whatever.
But yeah. Not illegal download, because that's bad, kids.
That's piracy.
Yeah, actually, I am. Hands down, I actually am against illegal downloads. This was something I just saw earlier today, which shocked me, is that it looks like there's going to be a crossover within Image between Chew and Revival. And I haven't had a whole lot of chance to do a lot of lot of research into this, but I'm kind of shocked because I don't remember a crossover within Image since like Wildcats Gen 13.
Mm-hmm.
So that's odd. I think it could be really cool, but you know, here you got somebody that you know eats something and gets the whole history of it, and you know the Revival where dead people are coming back to life. I mean, like, is he going to eat dead people?
I think usually when you eat things, they die.
Well, not if you only if you eat part of them.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's kind of an interesting thing. Well,
speaking
there.
Of interesting crossovers, Shaq is going to meet Steel as well as other NBA players.
Dude, don't. Charles Barkley too, man.
Oh, woo. I know. That's what I'm saying. The whole Sports Center cast or whoever
inside the NBA.
Wait, Shaq is Steel.
Oh my God, that would be the greatest joke in comic book history.
More reason why there needs to be Steel in this. But no, it's gonna be awesome. You're gonna have this limited edition comic book at NBA All-Star Weekend, which is going to happen in a week or two. And it's going to be these old-timey retired athletes against superheroes in like a three-point contest. It's going to be awesome.
I just want to see, like, I just want to see, like, Superman standing there just using his laser vision and blowing up every ball that they shoot. I don't know.
Just have, you know, I'm faster than everyone, I'm stronger than everyone, and I can fly around everyone, and I hate Superman.
Yeah.
Dude, this is going to be stupid, and I want an issue.
Yeah. What else is out there, guys?
Well, Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany.
Bettany, sorry about that. Chap. Great actor, has been revealed to be playing the role of Vision in the upcoming Avengers Age of Ultron.
Which is very interesting since he's been the voice of Jarvis, in the Iron Man.
And people, I know there was lots of speculation that the Jarvis AI will somehow become Ultron, but maybe the Jarvis AI will become Vision.
See,
either way, is he still married to Jennifer Connelly? Because if so, he's a lucky bastard.
Yeah, I believe he is. Although I'm still actually mostly jealous of Kevin Kline being married to, what the hell's her name?
Just from Hat Girl?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Wow, I just blanked on her name.
Well, then it doesn't matter because Jennifer Connelly wins because we remember her name.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
But no,
I can't believe I'm blanking. What an idiot.
But yeah, again, another... Another real solid actor, really, to add to the list that Marvel has assembled. So,
yeah. all right. So, anyway, Phoebe Cates was the actress, and okay. I was very very jealous of that. Painkiller Jane, which had a short-lived TV series and a short-lived TV movie, both on Sci-Fi. Surprised they didn't make it big. Is actually headed for the big screen. So the Jimmy Palmiotti and Joe Quesada book is apparently getting a big screen treatment. So keep your eye out for that. Palmiotti actually co-wrote the screenplay, and I think he's going to be producer on that as well. So hopefully this will make it. Apparently, from what I understand, the production company behind it also did like Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. So okay. that's
right.
A good
that
sign.
Movie's coming out soon, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sweet.
What else you guys got?
We got some numbers. Did you guys get to look at the numbers?
I have not.
Kevin, what?
Is it a number one or a number two?
No.
Oh, it's a number of couples.
No,
Diamond distribution numbers?
Yeah. Those fascinating numbers there. The headline from it was Image. It seems to be gaining a little bit of market share.
Unit share, though, right?
Yeah, units, yeah. Because they publish units, which would be issues sold, and dollars, which would be the amount of
dollars
revenue
sold.
Taken in.
And, how do you sell dollars?
easy. I've got a 5. If you give me a 10, I'll give you a 5.
Sounds like it's fair trade. Take them up.
Wait. Can I get...
I'll give you a 5 and a 1, so that'll be 2 bills to your 110.
Can I get 4 ones for my 10?
Yes.
Deal!
But Image moving up in total units move, that's a big deal. The rest of the numbers are pretty par for the course.
It's not surprising, though, with how well Image's books have been doing, what great content they've been putting out, and that huge announcement, you know, of the number of books they're putting out this year.
Well, so. Yeah.
Well, there might have been also some buzz. Definitely some buzz generated from their own little expo thing that they had.
And us mentioning them on Drunk on Comics, I'm sure, has helped them.
I think that's probably the biggest thing. Here's my last bit of news. I don't know if you guys have anything else after this, but my last one is that PETA put out a comic book. And PETA gave it to little kids at their elementary school. It's called Cow's Life. And
why is a bread company making
PETA, P E T A?
Oh, I thought people it was PITA.
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Panera PETA bread comic book.
Yeah, apparently this little elementary school had a baby cow on campus for a lesson about dairy farming, and then people from PETA showed up and handed these kids all a little comic book called The Cow's Life, where it shows them being electrocuted, hit with machetes. Dehorned, mutilated, infected, all this. And then PETA went, oh, we didn't mean to give that to kids. That was educational material for the parents. And so, but they apologized and they offered to give everybody non-dairy ice cream sandwiches.
Why would you have a non-dairy ice cream sandwich? Even if you're lactose intolerant, you still get an ice cream sandwich made with dairy.
I don't know. Why would you have PETA? But that's me.
PETA's so. Pretty good. It's got a little pocket. You can put stuff.
Oh, yeah. You can put all kinds of meat in it. and some dairy products. And throw an egg in there, too.
Yeah, it's just bad publicity to get their message out to do it that way.
My problem is, don't make a comic book like that at all. Just don't. That's not what comics are for.
You got the right to do that, but just don't hand it out to kids for free. You know? That's just...
Yeah. My problem is comic
It's like books. If I was going to make a comic book full of nude women and then say, I was just trying to teach them about reproductive health. You know? I think I'd get locked up for that. So
Yeah. I think comics should be about fun and making you think and being entertaining, not about scaring little kids.
Well, that's what they made it for. They want to get people to think, but unfortunately they went about it at the absolute
Maybe
wrong,
they're just trying
wrong,
to do the man. Walking bullvine. It's gonna be huge.
It's just gonna be moo, moo.
Grass, want grass?
Hey, yeah. Corn. All right, that's all I had. You guys got anything else?
No, I don't have anything else. Kevin? All right.
No, we're set.
Keep on trucking.
All right.
I'll quick do booze in the book right now because I'll try to. Throw it out there really quickly.
Throw it on a little tilt while you do it?
Yes. Booze in a Book, brought to you by High Five Co-op Brewery. Check them out, join, and become a member, like some of us are. What I have paired for you today, which is a small turn in my brain of how I came about it, was Turok Dinosaur Hunter number 1. While reading this, I kept thinking Jurassic Park. And the other night, I had a nice, very Bell's Amber Ale. Which the iconic image I always have from Jurassic Park is amber. So that's why I'm pairing.
That's where they get the little mosquitoes in. Amber.
So Turok Dinosaur Hunter number 1 paired with Bell's Amber Ale.
Done.
Dude, I like that. That was great. All right, Little Indy Turnpike. Indy Turnpike is brought to you by Fanfare Sports and Entertainment, located in Kalamazoo, Michigan. You can find them at fanfare-se.com. Go check out all of their original art. Yeah, because that's where I spend a lot of money, actually, is they have too much on hand. That's the problem.
Have they given you shares of stock yet?
No, I'm just paying salaries. Yeah. but this week for Indy Turnpike, I have The Adventures of Apocalypse Al. And this is from Image Comics, written by J. Michael Straczynski, line art by Sid Koshin, colors by Bill Farmer, and letters by Troy Petiri. I hope I'm saying his last name right. This is a book about private investigator Allison Carter, who she's a private investigator of all things revolving around the end of the world.
That's a good job.
Yeah. And so she goes from, like, beating a world eater to this guy who used to be a beat cop who is now a zombie, comes in and gives her missions and, like kind of gives her clues. And she's going after this guy who has the Book of Keys, which opens up doors to all these different dimensions. And he's trying to open up the door to hell, but he doesn't know which spell it is.
Nice.
So he's just opening up everyone till he gets to it.
Nice.
And he opens up the door to the dream world, and specifically the nightmares.
Okay.
And she actually gets caught in the nightmare in here. Here's the first thing. Let me touch on the art. Koshin did a really nice job just in general on layouts. It's a very iconic look at things. There really isn't anything that I would say is groundbreaking, but he does everything so well that it doesn't come across as just being standard. He does do a lot of there's a couple panels where he does break outside your normal, you know, just basic panel layout, but it's done very well. And here's a big thing on this one is the lettering. When you break outside of those panels that are normal, just layouts that you're used to following on here, which he, you know, I mean, like I said, he does it a little bit here. But when you break outside of that, if your letters aren't put in right, which in this case, Troy Petiri, thank you, made it so easy to follow in here that you never questioned where you're supposed to go. Now, part of it's the art, but a lot of it is your word balloons and where they're put in there.
Yeah.
Straczynski, I've been a little hit and miss on in the past. You know, I've never been like truly disappointed, but I've never been truly like yay until now. This book, he did a great job writing a really fun story, highly entertaining. There's actually some good humor in here. There's this guy who's a prophet. He's a clairvoyant, can see the future, but he can't necessarily pick and choose. So he's like, cucumbers are going up 5 cents a pound tomorrow. Some old lady's going to fall and break her hip because she's going down the stairs. Don't leave your mother alone. they're just really good things while she's dealing with the end of the world and fighting to get out of this this nightmare world in which she's a temp at a legal office. Here's the other great thing. This book was shit. I don't even know how much I paid for it.
It was shit.
$3.99, I'm guessing. I don't see a price tag on this because actually I picked up the retailer incentive cover,
mm-hmm.
Which I should give credit actually on that one. This cover was done by Ryan Sook on here. I want to say it was probably $4, $3.50, $4 on here. But it's 30 pages of uninterrupted story.
That's nice.
There aren't any ads until the very end.
Cool.
But good look to the book, great feel of the book. The dialogue is fantastic. And for those that are out there, I know a few people that aren't Straczynski fans. They're like, I don't like his work. Give this one a shot. It's unlike anything I've ever read by him, and well worth the read. I think this is actually a book for everybody. So cool. Maybe not under 16. You know, but it's
they don't know how to read anyways.
It's it's a PG-13 book. There's really nothing bad in it. But very, very cool book. And definitely one I'm glad I grabbed because I don't know if I would have other than the fact that I was like, oh, let's give it a shot. You know, I mean, it randomly grabbed me off the shelf. But it was on the Indy Turnpike.
Mm.
But anyway, Indy Turnpike, once again, brought to you guys by Fanfare Sports and Entertainment, Kalamazoo.
right. Last call? What else we got?
No, I was going to say anyone got last call.
I got last call! Iron Man.
Wait, you're buying a round?
Yeah. A round of my words. Iron Man, Iron Metropolis is number 21, came out this week, as well as God is Dead number 6.
Did you read that, Derek?
I have not gotten to that one. Which cover did you get?
The Cerebus
wraparound one.
Chewing around a person.
Yeah, I went with...
All I'm going to say is, wow, I can see why it was going to be a miniseries. Now I don't know how it's going to be a series. That's all I'm going to say. All
right.
Spoil it for both of you fuckers.
Avengers AI number 9 came out. Still a pretty decent story there in the computers. And New Avengers number 14. At first I thought that I'd picked up the same book twice because it starts like almost the exact same way that the last one started with Reed Richards talking. And so
I hate when people talk in books.
I know. I really want to go back and see if they actually just stole the same art and didn't have to make new art for it. But the art is Bianchi does, you know, great work. So
Simone Bianchi on that?
Yeah. And Dalalpi for the colors are, you know, they make a great team. So great story, Hickman.
Revelations number 2 of 6 from Boom. Paul Jenkins and Humberto Ramos on that book. That's cool. I'm not going to say a word about it. Just go grab number 1 and number 2 and you'll be happy.
You just said like 12 words about it.
Well, I'm not going to say anything about the story. Tony?
I just got two I got a quick talk about. Hinterkind, number 5 came out, and that story is still refreshing and great. But also, Superior Foes of Spider-Man, still such a great book, and I'm saddened to hear that the Superior lines are all ending when Superior Spider-Man ends, so I'm sad to see these characters that have come to like in their zany, evil...
The inferior Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The inferior foes.
Yeah.
Lazarus, number 6, from Image. Dead World Restoration, number 3. Twilight Zone, number 2.
Oh, yeah, fuck, that came out?
That was good.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's borrow that.
Code Red, number 3. All New Invaders. Trillium number 6. I'm getting a little lost.
Yeah.
Like I'm still loving it. And they do the flippy upside down pages in this one again, but I'm getting a little lost on it. Lastly, Black Widow number 3 is worth the price of admission for art alone.
Blah blah blah. Best value in comics this week. Red Lantern and Green Lantern. 28.
It's like Christmas colors.
On one page, in one book, $2.99.
For a flip book.
Yeah, you still get equal, you get a shit ton of pages in this book.
Cool.
Best value of the week.
It's like double mint gum.
I am so fucking pissed that I picked up both these books thinking they're individuals. Maybe I should have read special flip book issue to tell, but.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, we're drunk on comics.
Yeah, make sure you check us out on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out at Motor City this May.
Woo!
Check us out. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's going to be blowing people's eardrums out. Check us out at drunkoncomics.com where you can find all kinds of reviews. You can find our podcasts if you're just, you know, illegally downloading this from some other feed. Which, that's fine. They're all free. We don't give a fuck.
Yeah, that'd be awesome if they were illegally downloading this.
Actually, I've found sites that have our podcasts up on them that are like weird, like Chinese sites.
Awesome.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, like we're illegal downloads, bitches. but yeah, so keep reading your comics, guys. We'll be back again next week to talk to you about more then.
Huber Bach, it's almost 9 o'clock in the morning. I think I'll call up Mitch, wake up that son of a bitch. It's time to get rolling. I do this every day. Oh man, I've got to pay. I'm going rolling. My pen. Stand proud, I like to say it loud.
You better all stand clear. You see, I'm a regular, and my bot I'm toting. I pay no rental dues. I'm sporting custom shoes, a pair I've stolen. I do this every day. Oh man, I've got to pay. I'm going bowling. My pay. My bowling shirt.